Scott Shell, the extension entomologist with the University of Wyoming, will talk about alfalfa integrated pest management.
All right, I've handed out a couple things here. One is a little tool that we've developed over the years on grasshoppers, and I'll touch on them because they are an important pest in alfalfa, but we're not going to spend a lot of time on that. Standard disclaimer, if I mention a product, it is just educational purposes. Alfalfa does have quite a few pests that can cause economic losses. In Wyoming, probably the most important one would be alfalfa weevil. That'd be year in and year out. Grasshoppers, and in some areas of the state, maybe Mormon crickets. Then there's other slew of pests that can cause problems. But year in and year out, alfalfa weevil is probably the worst one. This is the immature stage. The grub is the proper term for these things, but a lot of times they're just called worms. They are essentially that stage that causes the most feeding damage and the losses, the economic losses to the growers. So IPM, Integrated Pest Management, is the approach that we advocate at UW. And what this boils down to is pretty much a common sense method in that you combine many approaches. You don't rely on just one to do your pest control. And pests, you know, refers to all of the things, whether it's insects, mites, weeds, diseases, management. So you can combine these all to protect your crops. And it's just the management. It's not usually eradication by any means, because that goal is usually unobtainable or too expensive. The management is to keep the injury below the economic injury level, so the costs of the damage. There's six steps of IPM, and I'll go into that in more detail stepwise. So step one, we have the proper identification of the damage and the responsible pest. And so if we're going to talk and concentrate more on alfalfa weevil today, it's kind of interesting to learn how it's tied together. Alfalfa is an introduced legume from Eurasia. Alfalfa is Arabic in origin as far as the name for it. Metacauga sativa is its scientific name. But it's Arabic for best fodder, and I think many cattle producers would probably agree that alfalfa is one of our best fodders for our animals. So alfalfa weevils are also Eurasian in origin. The first introduction was about 95 years ago near Salt Lake City for the western strain of Hypericum postica. There are two strains, eastern and western, of that particular species. They're kind of lumped together. Is alfalfa weevil in the southwest. There's the Egyptian one. And if you look at the distribution, Wyoming can have some areas with eastern and western both, but the majority are the western strain. How is that important? Well, I'll touch on it a little bit later. to go more into identification, probably everybody who grows alfalfa has seen alfalfa weevils and the damage they cause. Sometimes the damage, their feeding damage is more apparent than the actual insects themselves. They do the skeletonization, or essentially they're like picky eaters. They're leaving behind the thicker veins of the leaves and eating the more nutritious parts of the leaf. So this is their life cycle. I'll go through a little bit more detail. It's important to know the life cycles of your pests because sometimes you can do things that will suppress them rather simply just by, you know, habitat manipulations or eliminating an area where perhaps is their refuge when they're out of the fields, those types of things. 400 to 1,000 eggs per female. So they have a pretty high rate of reproduction. The eggs are pretty small, about a 50th of an inch. And the alfalfa female uses her chewing mandibles that are into her snout, to chew a hole in the stem of the alfalfa in the early spring, and then she deposits 5 to 20 eggs per hole. So that's where the initial damage will be, and this here's a kind of a blurry picture of those eggs. The eggs hatch, and they go through these stages or instars of growth. They come out initially, they're kind of more cream colored, and the white stripe isn't as apparent. When they get older, they become a brighter green with a definite white stripe down their back and some a little paler band on the sides. And their length here, given in millimeters, is relatively small, 1 to 2, so about a 25th of an inch to a little bit bigger initially. What we generally start sampling for them at the second instar is, and that would be about this size here, that's showing a person's fingers, and then the second instar larva feeding in the tip of an alfalfa plant. So as they go through these development stages, and it's temperature dependent, how fast this occurs, they get to the point where they've completed their larval development. The fourth instar is the last one, and then they'll quit feeding and form a silk cocoon in which to transfer into the adult stage. And if you're going to do control measures, you want to try to get it all done before any of them reach this point where they're in the pupal stage, because then most all of our insecticides or other things that you can do, even like early harvest, will not cause a great mortality, and you'll end up having these things survive and be a problem for you next season. So they, after they've gone through the larval instars and form a pupal case, they emerge. This is what the pupal looks like outside of that silken thing. Emerge as young adults, feed for a little while in our fields, and then usually leave for the summer and do what's called estivation. So this is interesting here, because I tried to do a little research about, well, where do they go when they leave the fields? How far do they go? And really couldn't find out much about it. They think that they go out and get in the leaf litter and upper layer of the soil at the edges of fields and just go dormant. You know, being weevils, their little armored bodies make them resistant to a lot of the predators like ants and things like that, and so they just hang out in the fields on the edges usually. So like I say, being insects, their development is related to how the temperature is, and the way this is forecast in the science of entomology is with degree days. It's also used in plant growth. It's a very handy thing. Alfalfa weevils, the threshold temperature at which their development starts in the spring and activity starts is about 48 degrees Fahrenheit. That's a degree day. For alfalfa growth, it starts earlier, which makes sense. The alfalfa weevil has to feed on alfalfa, so it would start after its host plant has started growing. So if we look at degree days with a base of 48, when do you start looking for that second instar? Well, when you've accumulated 425 degree days. Well, where do you get this information at? I'll show you a calculator that's available, but it's also interesting, a lot of times year to year, growers will note differences in the severity of their alfalfa weevil problems and when it occurs. And I looked at the degree day accumulations for a site at Shawnee, which is down toward Douglas, just to see why or how big a shift you could have just between 1 year. So at Shawnee, 300 degree days were accumulated by May 16th in 2007. The next year, June 2nd. So quite a difference in time, just because of variations within the temperature that spring. And usually noticeable visual damage by alfalfa weevil occurs at 375 degree days. And again, this occurred May 26th in 2007 and June 13th, 2008. There is a degree day calculator available. It's at this site here. And then you can go in, you can select a state. It's not projected quite right. Wyoming looks more like Kansas here. But all these black dots, I don't know if you can see them, represent stations at which you can get degree day accumulations. And you can go in there and you can pick these. Like, I'm pretty sure that Shawnee was down here, I think near Douglas is where I did that. So you can go in, you can get your location, you can set your thresholds. So 48 would be the threshold for alfalfa weevil. You can set an upper one, doesn't really matter that much, and then do a calculation based on, say, in this one, I just plugged in. It has historic records, and it also does current. So January 1st of 2008, and then end date of May 15th, and then see where you're at. So like this spring, as you get closer, you can go in there and plug in. So your start date could be April 1st, and maybe you're starting to get to that threshold where the alfalfa starts growing, and you can use it. It's kind of interesting to utilize degree days for both your pest management and also estimating crop harvest times too, because they've got, if you do some research, you can find out about when you can time your alfalfa harvest and not just base it on calendar date, but on development and growth of your crop. So certainly the peak second instar of alfalfa weevil occurs at 425 degree days. And again, like I say, if you calculate the degree days with the base temperature for alfalfa, then you can also use that as a estimated, well, when am I going to get to harvest this crop? So another step, the step three in IPM, is monitoring. And it's very important because once you've established that you have the pest, then you can go in, is it all over my fields or is it in spots? Because then if you can do spot treatments, you could probably save quite a bit of money, or you can start to prepare for doing an application, either hiring it done or doing it yourself. And then you can also monitor the pest population. Is it increasing or is it decreasing? And certainly that's an important thing. Sampling of alfalfa, you should start in the areas of the fields that are going to be the warmest, like south-facing slopes, sandy knolls, those types of areas. If you have very level sites, say, that are set up for flood irrigation, then it's probably going to be pretty uniform, but certainly different areas of your farm might even have some differences between the degree day accumulation. So a sweep net sampling is one of the recommended ways to do alfalfa weevil. And certainly you need to wait until the second instar is present and the alfalfa hay has reached at least 10 inches in height. And that's also a really easy way to get to your 425 degree days, because that matches up pretty well. When alfalfa has got that, usually in most cases that's approaching that 425 degree days, and you can start sampling. And we recommend a sweep net like this. It's a 15-inch sweep net. Now, my regular field model was in the shop, so I had to bring my racing model. See, I got the racing stripe on there. And you utilize this thing to swing it through the alfalfa. And I've included some information that has a link to a video that also shows a demonstration in the field from Utah State on your handout down here. One of the problems with sweep netting is it does recommend that you do it under certain climatic conditions that can be kind of rare in Wyoming, such as calm, no more than a gentle breeze. So there are some drawbacks to it. When you get out there, a sweep is considered one 180 degree arc, and you try to swing it through the alfalfa with enough vigor that the plants, you hit it about halfway, about 5 inches down from the top, and so they swing over and flip those little weevils off into your net. You don't want to be swinging it so hard or so low that you're ripping a lot of alfalfa off of it. Then you'll have a mess to try to pick through, but you make 10 sweeps and try to do it randomly through your fields, at least five for a 30-acre field or larger, in five spots, and you do these 10 times. And so you'll just walk at a normal pace and swing it through there. depending on how much resistance you've got, you know, using two hands to try to get a nice uniform sampling. Because what I've included with this little handout is probably one of the more important things that is in here, and that's a yield loss of your alfalfa based on the number of alfalfa weevils that are in your fields. And that's very important because you have to use that to calculate what your action is going to be. Let's see here. So that 10 180 degree sweeps are taken, that's a sample. And then you will go and you can, one of the things that you can do is utilize, I use a lot of very sophisticated equipment in my profession, these Ziploc bags, that's the entomologist's best friend. After you've got your sample, you can swing them down into the bottom and transfer them into a bag. And then after you've got your field sampled, you can go and if you have a pickup truck with a tailgate, that's a good place to sort them out and count your samples. If you've got one of those black plastic protectors on there, it's corrugated, no, that's not very good. Use your hood then. But you'll want to count out and calculate your numbers of weevils per sweep and get your average for these samples. So again, they give some recommended minimums of sampling. So as with most things, the more samples you get, the more accurate you'll be. But certainly getting at least an idea of what's happening in your fields with the sweep netting will give you a better idea of the numbers of weevils you've got. Now the other thing, now not everybody has a bucket, or I mean a sweep net, but everybody's got a bucket. If you're really good with a bucket, you can get actually sponsors. And then, so I have a lot of problems with, you know, my colleagues, they have very complex, technically, you know, sophisticated equipment, so I have to do something to make myself feel better. You can go through the field with a bucket, and you will sample 10 stems, try to do it randomly. You'll go through, and very gently, you'll pick it off, and you can cup the top of the thing to keep the larva on there. Put 10 stems in your bucket, and then go gather them up, beat the stems on the side of the bucket, and you'll have a sample of weevils. So this is another way of sampling the weevils. It is not as you know, essentially sensitive to climatic conditions as sweep netting can be. So you can do it in windy conditions. The little weevils will be feeding the tips, and so you can still get a good sample. So this is, there's two methods, and if you'll look at this chart that I gave you, you'll see I tried to approximate the numbers. So if you're using the bucket sample and you come up with, say, two weevils per stem on average, you can enter that chart and then you can look across and have an estimate of the yield loss per in tons per acre. And it has both, like, the first harvest, which will you'll get the most loss, and then you can have some loss in the second harvest based on the regrowth not coming back because of feeding by the weevils. And then it also has total yield loss. And so then you can calculate, because you've got to have those numbers in order to get your economic threshold. And then in the line below the dark line, I've got the numbers for the bucket or the sweep net method. Below that, because you're going to have a lot more weevils after you've done the sweep netting method than the bucket method. So again, I've demonstrated the sweep net procedure. And certainly, you know, if you're really vigorous with the sweep net, you might want to wear safety glasses, but probably that is not necessary. And read and follow the directions of anything that you choose to use for control. But before you can make that decision for control, you want to make sure that you're at the action threshold. So that's where the economic cost is less than the benefit. Now, the old recommendations used to be do chemical control if you have 40% tip feeding that is more than 7 to 10 days before harvest, because most of the products had a 7 to 10 day pre-harvest interval before you could go in and cut your hay. This was the old standard, and it didn't really take into account hay values that are as high as what we've seen, or what the changes in chemical costs were. So you really have to do some calculations, and if you're like me, you don't really enjoy that. But like I said, you got to enter this table and figure out what your approximate yield loss will be, and then from that, based on what you think the hay is worth to you, whether you're using it for yourself or whether you're selling it for dairy hay or horse hay or some other high value, that will vary with your cost of treatment. Or if you're even want to treat, you can also do early harvest. Method that you use to try to manage this pest, you want to make the decision in a timely fashion. And certainly the timing, if you're really close to harvest, you might want to go ahead and do that. I had a fellow near Douglas at one time. We were doing grasshopper work, and I saw he had a setup on his swather I'd never seen before. He had the ability to spray underneath the swath as he accumulated it behind the machine. And he would spray Malathion EC57 at a relatively low rate, but it would be on the stubble, and then the swath would land on top of that. Because when you cut your field, the alfalfa weevils that are accumulated in the hay will stay in that swath and then go down through it to there. Others will be trying to crawl to get under the shade of that swath, and you're applying that chemical to a limited part of the field, but where a high number of the weevils are going to accumulate. Like I said, I'd never seen that set up before or since, but it seemed to make a lot of sense. And in Malathion, he wasn't applying it to the hay per se, he was applying it to the stubble, and so there was no problem with his pre-harvest interval. So the economic injury level is important to calculate, and I included on your handout how to do this. And this is certainly varies with your chemical cost, your application cost, hay value, and can you get a multi-year benefit if you get a really good control on your alfalfa weevil. There's also benefits that are harder to put a handle on, is as far as increased yield, nutrient content, because like I said, the alfalfa weevils are eating the more nutritious parts of the hay, stand regrowth speed, and alfalfa stand health and vigor. Because certainly, the faster you can get that alfalfa to come back and shade out the bare areas between plants to help reduce your weed infestations, that's also a benefit of keeping your alfalfa stand healthy. So certainly, this is a good way to determine your action threshold, and then there are other options besides chemicals that you can use to help suppress your alfalfa weevil. If you're going to do early harvest or a pesticide treatment, you want to do it in a timely manner. Cultural control, grazing is considered a component in cultural control. We'll talk a little bit about that. Alfalfa weevil resistant cultivars of alfalfa, whether that's practical, biological control, and then also a little bit more about other kind of non-standard insecticide treatements. So, did I go the right way? Yes, definitely if you're going to do it, I can't emphasize this enough. You want to do it, make your decision to do a treatment, you want to do it before they've reached the pupal stage, because then you won't get good control and you'll be dealing with that problem again the next year. So cultural control, there has been research done on that. In Wyoming, fall grazing would not be beneficial, because in areas with milder climates where alfalfa weevil can re-enter the fields and lay eggs and hatch larvae, this can be of a benefit. But in Wyoming, it's not considered to be a possibility. They have done research on early spring grazing, and it might work better for Wyoming. This was a study done in Montana where they had, this is a percentage of plants damaged by feeding alfalfa weevil larvae. And this was in the non-grazed. You can see there was quite a bit of damage, and the grazed, area. And this would be due to essentially the sheep's eating the early stems that have the eggs that have been inserted by the females. And they followed it up, did it again, so they had 2 years of data, again showed a benefit. But the other thing that was also good about this study is they didn't see reductions in yields between the grazed and ungrazed fields, but there are problems with it. Essentially, there's a risk of bloat by putting the animals out on this alfalfa. This surprised me. I didn't realize this. Palatability of immature alfalfa. I guess it, because of estrogen levels in the alfalfa at that stage, it's not very palatable to grazing animals. You will need to allow the first cutting to flower to help replenish the root reserves if grazed early and too intensely to help maintain your stand health if you were to do this. Okay, some more about other alternative methods of suppression. There have been alfalfa weevil resistant cultivars developed. I talked to Professor Islam about this, and he'll give you probably a lot more detail this afternoon, but he recommends that you pick your varieties based on resistant to common alfalfa diseases rather than the alfalfa weevil. We have good alternatives for control of the alfalfa weevil, but the disease issue is certainly risks your stand health more, and having to replace a stand due to disease is certainly going to be a costly endeavor, whereas alfalfa weevil is relatively economical to control in contrast. He will give his presentation later. This is just some information, contact information for Dr. Islam if you can't stay for this. But certainly he has some good information on variety selection for Wyoming. Biological control. There has been a lot of introductions of the parasitoids and predators of alfalfa weevils from their original native range into North America. And this shows like it would probably be a painful operation for the weevil being attacked by this. In this line drawing, this is a Bathylopictes wasp. It's a non-stinging wasp. They don't sting humans, but they do insert eggs into hosts, insects. And they found that they have very good success pretty much year in, year out in the eastern part of the country with the parasitoid rates. But in the western part of the country, not so much. There's been some research that has thought that this could be due to an infection of an endosymbiont called Wolbachia pipentius. I'm not even sure about that. Wolbachia is how I've heard it described as most the time. And it's a type of bacteria that will be in the western alfalfa weevil, and it can attack the larva of the Bathylopictes parasitoid and prevent them from successfully killing the alfalfa weevil larva. So in return, it's one of those things, the Wolbachia it has a cost for the alfalfa weevil, but it provides protection from a parasitoid. These are the pupal cases of alfalfa weevil that have been killed by the parasitoid. This white line shows on there, and then a wasp will emerge from that instead of a weevil. So what are other products are out there? You know, we don't want to rely on one product over and over again, or you can have resistance. My friend Dean McLean, who's the aerial applicator in Torrington, goes down quite often to Kansas when his colleagues down there get behind on alfalfa weevil treatments. And in the area of Kansas that he goes to, they have had to give up using the pyrethroids like Warrior, which is a class of insecticide, this, which was used for a control here, because it has been used over and over again and the weevils have gotten resistant to it. So certainly alternating chemicals. And this is this was a trial done in California of a reduced risk insecticide called Steward, a DuPont product. And it showed, this is the untreated, and this is the number of larvae per sweep in the fields, or test fields, and then three day or three sampling periods at 3 days, 7 days, and 14 days of population. So Warrior is kind of the old standard that has been used a lot, a pyrethroid class. And then Steward had very good success. It was a little slower acting, but it had very good control. And it has a pretty short reentry interval and a short pre-harvest interval, and it's got a good non-target reducing impact on them and low toxicity to humans. So certainly this is probably going to be an alternative. It might be more expensive than some of the other things that we would use, but you have to keep in mind you need to alternate your chemicals. Biopesticides such as Metarhizium fungi or Bavaria bassiana, those things have not proven to be either very effective in the current formulations or strains of these pathogens, or they haven't got their labeling yet. So alfalfa is a pretty valuable crop, and certainly there could be more demand for organic methods of production in the future. And certainly there is some studies being conducted in California and Montana about this. This is one, it's called Entrust. Its active ingredient is a spinosad, which is a chemical derived from a bacteria, a soil bacteria. And essentially here they had the control over here again. Warrior was used as the positive control, the old standard pyrethroid, and then Entrust was here. Now, they did go ahead and label Entrust SC formulation for alfalfa weevil, but they do use the word suppression and not control. And they also label it for a higher rate than was tested here. So, you know, as you can see, the Entrust was leaving more weevils behind, and it might not be really good at this point in time to make a recommendation on that at this point. So other insecticides, like I say, we need to alternate our old standards with new chemistry whenever we can to prevent resistance from occurring. Steward looks like it's going to be a good choice. It's not a restricted use pesticide. I don't think it has labeling for chemigation at this point in time, which I know a lot of guys who are putting in pivots are also getting into the thing about being able to either fertilize or do pesticide treatments through their systems, chemigation essentially. Cobalt, a product that has an old chemistry and a new combined to help battle resistance. Proaxis is a new chemistry and an old chemical. And by what I mean by that is in organic chemistry, you can have molecules that are essentially the same, but they're isomers of each other. They're like mirror images. And one will be active, and one will be inactive. And Proaxis, Besiege, just some of the newer ones that are coming onto the market. You have to protect pollinators if you're going to do alfalfa. Many people now do most of their cutting on alfalfa when it's not in bloom or fully in bloom. But again, honeybees and leafcutter bees are attracted to alfalfa. And especially if you're doing applications and you have registered honeybee hives and leafcutter bees in your area, certainly you have to let those owners notify them of those things. So probably the last step in IPM that a lot of people forget to do is evaluate your results. How am I doing for time, Hudson? Am I okay? Okay. Management tactics. Evaluate what you're doing. What are you doing currently? Chemigation. Are you using it or you're not? Are you going to try it? You'll have to investigate more about that. There's some very sophisticated equipment out there that is available that I attended a crop school in Powell not too long ago, and they had a representative of the leading manufacturer there, and it's pretty interesting. They can do a very accurate, well-calibrated applications through those systems. Spray buggies, more and more farmers are getting those. Arrow applications, if you have to hire it done. Stubble treatments, what chemicals, what results? do you have to treat every year? Those types of things are something you want to ask. You know, it's the old saying, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. If you're not happy with what's going on with your fields, or you're having the same problem over and over again, maybe there's some stuff that we can look at and change up and see if you get a better result. So you always have to wait until the re-entry interval has expired to go back in your fields to resample it. But you can, again, either get yourself a good insect net or the bucket and go through and resample. Did you get a good kill? That's, you know, a lot of times I think people just said the power of positive thinking. Well, I spent the money, I should have got a good kill. You should go and check, make sure that you aren't seeing problems with resistance or didn't get a good application. And you also want to compare your yield and feed quality between the treated and untreated fields if you have them on your place. If you did a treatment, you should see a boost in yield, but you want to check it out. There we go. So certainly the evaluation is very important. And the earlier speakers have talked about, whatever tactic you choose, you have to get the paper and pencil and the calculator out and crunch the numbers. Make sure that it's making you money, or at least not costing you money. So again, like I said, I concentrated on alfalfa weevil today. Grasshoppers are often a problem. Most of the time, especially if you have flood irrigation, your grasshoppers are not originating in your alfalfa fields. They're moving in from the source habitats outside of the alfalfa fields. And there's a lot of things that you can do there that are pretty cheap to take care of grasshoppers. If you do a application in an alfalfa field, it's probably going to take a relatively expensive chemical to do the control. Outside in non-crop areas, there's a chemical that we recommend for use against grasshoppers called Dimlin 2L. It is restricted use pesticide, but you can apply it. It has a long residual, and it works against the grasshoppers when they first hatch out. I've got this little sample here, and there's one on the back table. It has the first and second instars of a common pest species of grasshoppers in Wyoming. I want to pass that around. That's what you got to look for. A lot of people think that grasshoppers spontaneously generate, that all of a sudden one day they're, you know, 2 inches long and flying in their pickup truck window and they're going through the fields. But most of the time they hatch out, and as they grow, and they grow rapidly and consume a lot of vegetation. They generally eat their body weight per day, and that may not sound like much, but one of the more common pests in alfalfa fields is Melanopolis bivitatis, and at just 30 Melanopolis bivitatis per square yard, that's equivalent of 200 pounds of biomass per acre. And so that's like having a 200-pound sheep that can eat its weight daily in your fields. So that's certainly... It depends somewhat on the grasshopper species and the year. If you do a treatment, in your field borders, where, you know, if you're adjacent to other cultivated or flood irrigated fields, they're concentrated right in those border areas, and you can get away with a small buffer. If you're adjacent to a large area of rangeland, that as it dries out and you've got the nice green alfalfa, they'll be moving in from quite a distance, and you have to do, it could be anywhere up to a mile. But this is another thing that we've got that helps you with this, because one of the first steps is identification. So you look for little grasshoppers. We've got a book here that has information about the common pest species of grasshoppers. It has pictures of the adults, and then more importantly, the nymphal stages. There are some grasshoppers that are not much of a threat to alfalfa. They're purely grass eaters. There's three grasshoppers that are really the major problem in alfalfa, and they are also usually a problem in other crops. They're mixed eaters and will readily consume alfalfa. So identifying you've got grasshoppers, how many per square yard, and on the back page of that handout I gave you, where did I put it? Here. is some information from the University of Nebraska-Lincoln that talks about grasshopper populations in the margin of your field, in the field, and whether they're immatures or adults, and talks about these treatment thresholds. Now, like I said, if you can utilize the Dimlin, it's very cheap chemical because it's used at such a low rate for grasshoppers, and you can do a lot of protection if you can keep your grasshoppers out of your fields. So I'm wrapping up here. I think we're not too bad on time. I want to thank you for your attention, and certainly if you do any applications, always wear your recommended safety equipment. Read and follow all label directions. It is the law. And if you have any questions about alfalfa IPM, my contact information is right at the top of this handout that I gave you. The other thing I'd like to remind you is the High Plains Integrated Pest Management website that I also listed at the top. It's got a kind of a complex URL, and you can Google HPIPM and you'll come up with it. It has very good information. It's compiled by a consortium of universities, University of Wyoming, CSU, Nebraska, the Dakotas, and Montana State. And they try to keep it updated as far as what's currently registered for use on pests. They have agronomic, they have livestock, they have horticulture. Lots of things are listed there that is pretty up to date as far as information on pest control and integrated pest management. Okay, well, it seemed like I went through that pretty fast. And like I say, if you've got any questions specifically for me, I'd be happy to try to answer them. My specialty is more grasshoppers on rangeland than intensive crops, but if I don't know the answer, I bet I know somebody who does, and I'll find it for you. All right. Thank you.